Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. Well, it was a wild week one in the NFL, just ended the other day. Feels like it was yesterday because it kind of was, but man, week two is right around the corner. I don't know about the rest of you. I'm worried. It's going a little fast. I'm not sure this is good. This is, we're already in week two, barely week one last week. I'm not sure how I feel about that because that's too fast, man. That's too fast, but it's going to be the Super Bowl here before we know it. You blink and you'll miss it, so hope you're watching all you can. I know the NFL puts a game on 4 days a week, so hopefully you're making time for all of those. But before we get too deep in the weeds, we got lots of college and NFL football to talk about. Only 30 minutes to go, so hopefully you guys have your schedules pinpointed for us because we got a tight 30-minute window for you. But I want to bring in my co-host, Bryant Knox, the Bryant Knox, at Bryant Knox on Twitter. He's everywhere. He's anywhere. He's everywhere you want him to be. Nowhere you don't. He's a great co-host, great sports commentator. Everything this guy knows is gold, and he doesn't know anything that's not, which is just tremendous because there's too many talking heads these days. Coming back, hope you had a good week one. How the hell are you, buddy?
I'm good, but I hate to reveal this. I've actually been incorrect about 96% of things I've ever said on this podcast. So as long as I've got you fooled and anybody else, I think we're good.
How's the line go? 4% of the time it works every time, something like that?
That is 100% correct, yeah. And you can take my word for it if you want.
It's got real panther in it, so you know it's good.
Also correct.
Well, I don't know about you, but it was a very quick week one. For you, being a Dolphins fan, it probably wasn't that quick of a week one. You guys had to go out and injure three players on your opposing team and set a record for the longest regulation football game ever played in the United States. How's it feel? You know, week two is right around the corner. Do you feel good about your prospects this year?
First of all, it's an honor to have, played such a personal role in the longest game of all time during the Super Bowl era. You know, I was proud of my performance during it. I may or may not have been able to consume an additional adult beverage during that, rain delay. So I did my part, and I appreciate your recognition of that. I did like what I saw out of Micah Fitzpatrick. You know, I was a little bit down on him, not because I didn't like him in a vacuum, but because I was just really hoping that one of those top-tier quarterbacks fell to the Dolphins. And when that didn't happen and they took, Micah, I thought, okay, solid pick, not nearly as flashy or as exciting as I was hoping for. And I kind of got down on the pick itself for that reason, but he was all over the place. He was in the right places. He had a couple big tackles, including I think he may have had a third or fourth down tackle right outside the end zone that forced turnover on downs. I think it was really, really great to see him just be as active and as swarming as he was. So that was my big takeaway from it. It was difficult to stay on top of everything just because there were so many delays. Right. But the bits and pieces that I saw, that was kind of my main takeaway from week one.
Fitzpatrick's going to be good for you guys. I mean, they couldn't really figure out what to call him coming out of college because he played corner, he played safety, he played nickel, played linebacker. So they called him a chess piece, which I think is very fitting for what he brings to the table. I think you'll be happy with him. He may not be a shutdown corner or, a Cam Chancellor or Troy Polamalu at safety, but he's so good across the board. I think he's going to be like another Charles Woodson. So I think you got a sneaky good player there. Maybe not the Denzel Ward that you may have wanted, but you got Micah Fitzpatrick, which is still really good.
Yeah, and, if he's anything nearing like some of those names that you said, I think that's a huge testament to his potential. And the fact that he is maybe already drawing some of those comparisons, I always try to stay on the cautiously optimistic side of those, right. But those are a lot of fun to think about at this point.
All right, well, we'll move on to the first of two main events because we've only got about 25 minutes left, so we got to keep cruising. Are you okay with the Dolphins having maybe sabotaged Marcus Mariota's third campaign?
somebody that I met recently put it really well as far as NFL fandom versus college football fandom. And, you know, I do consider myself an analyst and a fan to an extent, but he said that to him, college football was like, what did he say? It's like your grandparents when you're a kid, and then the NFL is like your grandparents after they move to a retirement home.
Right.
And I was like, I mean, that's a little bit harsh to say that you, okay, you may be, of course, your affection for them and your love for them does not change, but your willingness to kind of tune in, like as a kid, you would love to go to your grandparents' house all the time. You'd check in, give them phone calls. As an adult, maybe not quite as much just because life happens. And that's the same way I see it. So anything that, you know, Mariota does for me at this point is kind of a bonus. I do consider myself a Mariota fan, but I'm not looking at his situation too closely since I don't really have a true, you know, fandom for the Titans. At least right. I haven't since, you know, Eddie George laced up the cleats. I was a huge Eddie George fan back in the day.
I had a friend recently say that college football is like going to the circus. There's so much pageantry. Anything can happen. You don't know what to expect. Like being a kid there, you get your peanuts and your Coke, and you just sit down and you're like, I literally have no idea what's going to happen. I'm so excited right now. And then the NFL is like just going to a ho-hum movie on Tuesday night on Tightwad Tuesday. You hope for a good product, but you're not expecting to be the greatest thing you've ever seen in your entire life, and you're probably eating a discount bag of Raisinets or something. So not quite the same product, but we're getting there. We're getting closer. You know, the pageantry is definitely improving, but it's all in the pregame show. They need to work on how they get – I would love to see a band in the NFL. I know the Colts have something resembling that that's unaffiliated with the team. But it'd be really neat to have, like, a student band for every NFL team. That would really increase the pageantry for me.
Hey, if we could make it the Stanford band too, that would be even better. Better. Those guys rock. Those
the
guys
one
rock.
From 1982, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So on to Seattle. We saw them play at Denver last week. When you and I talked a couple weeks ago, previewing this matchup, we both agreed that Denver would win, but we were kind of split on how it would happen. I think this kind of split the difference there. I mean, Seattle kept it really close. They probably could have won if they had done a couple of things differently. And Denver didn't have the firepower some expected. Is this a game you think Seattle can learn from, or was this an uh-oh kind of moment?
Well, Seattle can learn from it. I think they can put, you know, obviously my fandom for Rashad Penny is no secret. I think they can put him in better situations, and I think that there are many playmakers on the team that they can put in better situations. And so, yeah, you can look at this game against good defense and say, yeah, there are things, there are X's and O's you can take from it that are very...
Man, that hurdle by Chris Carson on like second and 20 running for like 15 yards, hurdling a defender. I was sitting there going, whew, I don't know if Penny's going to get much playing time. That boy looks healthy.
He did. As far as like the non-X's and O's go, it was kind of an uh-oh moment because I was really hoping to see a little bit of improvement out of the offensive line. We knew they weren't going to be world beaters, but I was really hoping that they could come out and just show a sort of revitalized effort out there. But man, Russell Wilson had to just create and create again. And you like to watch that as like a casual fan because it makes it more exciting. But holy smokes, if he has to do that all year, it's going to be problematic.
I hope that won't be the case. I mean, something to take into consideration is that he's got Von Miller and Bradley Chubb on the opposite side. Even with an elite offensive line, that's a tough draw. But week one, when you've barely had time in the preseason to play together as a starting unit, and Dwayne Brown had to leave for a little bit with an injury, George Fant is still working his way back in, you're not really sure what to get from Ifedi, Jarius Sweezy's been gone for a while, you've really only got your left guard and your center that are really mainstays right now. So having that draw in week one on the outside, that's tough. I think that they managed it pretty well, and they ran up the middle a lot to try to take pressure off of him. But on those true passing downs, it was obvious that line's just not ready to stay upright yet. But they don't get any easier of a matchup this week. We'll get into that in a minute. But I think that as they play some less than all-pro defensive ends, you'll start to see some good gelling on the offensive line.
I think that's a good point. And, you know, it was an uh-oh moment for me because I just kind of had high hopes. But I think that you're right, that the draw was especially tough. And within the next few weeks, we'll see, we'll have a larger sample size to really see what the situation is.
The good news is that after week one, there are 7 sides, so they're not dead. So they still count as undefeated. So of those 17 teams, none of them are any closer to the Super Bowl this week than the teams that lost. It's a long season, so take it with a grain of salt. There's not really any uh-oh moments in week one, unless you're a Packers fan and saw Aaron Rodgers lose his right leg in the first half against Chicago and then pull a Willis Reed moment, and now they're saying that he has to wear shorts because his knee is swollen so much he can't wear pants. That's bad. That's an uh-oh moment. Russell Wilson not quite getting the protection he needs from his offensive line the first week against two amazing elite pass rushers. I'll take my risks. I think it'll pan out the way you want. So the next game we want to talk about, we'll just go through a quick division recap. So we had the Rams at the Raiders on Monday night. That game didn't go quite as expected. The Rams looked kind of sloppy in the first half. The Raiders looked like they came out swinging. The game was tied at halftime, tied in the third quarter, and then the wheels came off for Oakland, and the light bulb came on for L.A., and they ran away with a 33-13 victory. Did you get a chance to see this game, and do you like what you saw from the Rams? Do you think they picked up where they left off last year and did enough to tell you that that first half was more of them shaking off rust after not playing the entire preseason?
Yeah, I caught a lot of it. I won't claim that I caught the whole thing because I did.
You can. It ended at 11 o'clock.
Yeah. Like, I tuned out a little bit in the second half, and then I came back to it. But, yeah, I think that you're exactly right, that for the Rams, it really was a matter of getting loose, getting the rust off, figuring out, you know, who has the wind to be a go-to option right now. And I, you know, you and I talked about at one point in the preseason that I think this team may struggle a bit during some lulls during the year, and that they may not be kind of the super team that a lot of people want them to be. But even if they're one step beneath that, that's still a very good position to be in. Yeah. And I think they showed a lot of that potential.
Totally agree with you there. Raiders have some work to do, but the rumor mill is that they're bringing back Martavius Bryant after just a week and change after cutting him due to some suspension looming. Now, apparently after seeing what they saw on Monday night, they're ready to bring him back. I actually did a double take when I saw that, thinking they must have meant Dez Bryant. That's who they're bringing in, but no, Martavius Bryant. So Dez Bryant remains unsigned. Moving quickly on to Arizona, they played Washington. Washington looked great. Arizona, you kind of looked in your crystal ball last week and said you think Josh Rosen will be the quarterback sooner rather than later. After the Arizona Cardinals played pretty dismal football last Sunday, I think you're right. I think Sam Bradford has limited time there, and it'll be Rosen's future maybe sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, I won't go as bold as to pick a week, but I think that at some point it just becomes too clear to not make the move.
They've got a tough draw this week playing LA. We'll get into that in a minute, but I think if they go 0-2 and it's pretty bad, that they might have to look at making a switch earlier than they thought. And then lastly, San Francisco traveled to Minnesota. It went better than maybe expected. It was a pretty sloppy game early on for the Niners. Vikings jumped out to a big lead early, and then the Niners caught back up. A few mistakes by Garoppolo, but, you know, he's not going to be 5-0 forever. I think we all saw this loss coming. But it was a tougher matchup for the Vikings than I think they anticipated. Being at home, being Super Bowl favorites, they're breaking out their brand-new quarterback in Kirk Cousins. And Garoppolo was without Marquise Goodwin after, I think, like the second drive. And he may not play this week, so limited options. Alfred Morris didn't really play well. Matt Breida didn't play well. So kind of phenomenal that they kept it within 8 to begin with. Obviously, the Vikings look pretty sharp. What are your thoughts on San Francisco? They've got some tough games coming up. Did they show you enough, or are you kind of questioning if the hype was real?
I'm definitely questioning if the hype was real. I think that we do have to look at Jimmy G and say, did we get a little too excited? I mean, right. out of 34 quarterbacks who played in week one, he had the 31st best quarterback rating,
right?
Which is not a good position to be in. His quarterback rating was 13.1, which only beat out Derek Carr, Matthew Stafford, and Peterman in Buffalo.
Not good company.
And not good company, not good company at all. But, I mean, speaking of not good company, I think the bigger issue that I took with their week one matchup was that, you know, they have – what is he making, $140 million, whatever something it is, like Jimmy that. Garoppolo? He's the $140 million man who's surrounded by sort of like discount – bargain bin supporting yep. cast members largely. And I think that is going to, you know, I won't say come back to bite them, because it was the move that they had to make with Garoppolo and it made sense. It still makes sense, but you have to at some point start filling in some of the gaps around him. Right. And that was concerning for me to see those gaps look as wide as they did.
I think they'll get those gaps filled over time. It's just, you can't waste time right now. He's maybe a year or two away from being at his peak power, so you better make sure that he has a Super Bowl-worthy all-star cast surrounding him by then. So you maybe have a year to get those parts in place, and then another year for them to gel and win a championship. And after that, I'm not sure how many years he'll have left at the top. I mean, I know we talk about quarterbacks playing till they're 40, but there's some guys that are still struggling in their late 20s. So you can't count on him being this good for much longer. You have to capitalize while the irons are hot.
Agreed.
So that's week one in the books. The division went 1-3 this week. So hopefully this week they can do better than that. We know that the Rams have a win. They're the only ones right now. This week they play Arizona. Arizona really struggled. I liked what the Rams did in the second half against the Raiders. I'm not sure they'll have that much of an easy go against Arizona's defense, but Arizona's offense leaves a lot to be desired. Real quick, because we only have about 3 minutes before we need to move on to our next topic, who do you like in this one? I assume it's L.A., and what's your prediction on the score?
Yeah, I'm going L.A. I agree with everything you said, but one thing that I think is going to be a sigh of relief for Rams fans is that they are going to put together a more complete first half in this right. one, I really believe. I think
they might have overlooked the Raiders last week.
I think so, too.
That dirt field doesn't help. It just doesn't.
The dirt field doesn't help. Gruden was part of the 7 head coaches who all went winless this week in their first games with their new teams.
Right.
Khalil Mack was obviously gone and dominating in Chicago. Like there were enough things that I think they looked past and they had to shake off the rust. I think the Rams get it by a touchdown, and I think that it feels close throughout, but I think it also feels like a better game for the Rams throughout.
Agreed. I think there'll be some growing pains, but I think once they get gelled as an offensive unit again, remember they lost Sammy Watkins, gained Brandon Cooks. As much as that looks right on paper, there are some things to do in reality, and they've just got to get good at playing together. These guys didn't play in the preseason, so they're a little rusty, but I think the second half showed a little more of who they are than the first. The next one is we have San Francisco traveling to Detroit in a matchup no one wants to watch. Will you watch this game, and who do you think wins this game?
No, there's no chance I watch it, if I'm being completely honest. Like, I hate to be that blunt, and I could probably sugarcoat it a little bit and maybe hedge my bet here. But
sorry,
no,
before you get too deep, I made a mistake. Detroit is traveling to San Francisco. Does that change anything for you?
If I were in San Francisco, I might try to catch it on a cheap ticket, but nah, I'm not going to be catching this one. I do think San Francisco pulls out the win.
Right.
I think that we saw enough from them, and we saw so little from Detroit in week one that we can say they probably cover the 6-point spread. But even if they don't, I think it could be a sloppy game where they win by 3 points. But either way, I have San Francisco coming out on top.
Yeah, it's the television primetime headlining event no one wants to watch. That's the movable object versus the stoppable force. No, not too many people are interested in this, but good luck to those of you that are. Hope it's a better game than we assume, but wouldn't get your hopes up. So then finally on to Seattle, traveling to Chicago for the Monday night game. Weather hopefully will be good, because Soldier Field is just really bad no matter what, but it's even worse in the rain. I think Seattle can win this one. I think Chicago showed a lot of heart in the first half against Green Bay last week, but they showed a lot of issues in the second half. I'm not really sure which of those teams is the real deal. Probably somewhere in the middle. Seattle, on the other hand, shot themselves in the foot so many times versus Denver. I think they can beat Chicago, who I don't think are as good as Denver is across the board. Who do you like in this game, and are you worried at all at Doug Baldwin not being there for the next couple weeks?
Yeah, I am worried about that, but as far as this game goes, I've got Seattle with a close win. I think they can force Mitchell Trubisky into some bad decision-making, and I think that's probably going to be the difference maker there, because in a close game, you really can't have your quarterback putting guys in bad position. And I know that the Seahawks aren't the dreaded defense that they once were in the recent past, but I think they're good enough at this point, and we just still don't quite know what the Bears have in Trubisky,
right,
that they can mess with him in a close game, which will end up in their favor.
Well, I think we saw that Khalil Mack is an amazing generational player, but one guy does not a defense make, and once they figured out how to keep him at bay in the second half, that defense looked pretty average. So if Seattle can figure that out with their offensive line, which good luck to them, that should be in their favor, but wouldn't hold my breath. I think this one could get a little messy before they clean it up in the second half.
Yeah.
So moving on to college football, we promised you guys some Ducks and Beavers talk last time. Didn't do it. Apologies for that. So we made sure the last few minutes of the show, we got to it this time. I actually promised Bryant before the show that I'd flip the script and start with college. Unlike a career arc, I didn't flip the script, and I went straight to the professionals and then back to college. So for those of you that did that and went back to school after starting your career, this should be very remedial for you. Bryant, we'll start with the Beavers and make the Ducks the last thing on the show. What do you like from them this year? They're 1-1. They played Ohio State, I think, better than everybody thought they would, with or without Urban Meyer. They had a nice win against, I believe, Sacramento State last week. And then they draw Nevada this week. What do you like about them so far?
I like that they're putting points on the board. That's, we think about the keys to winning a football game, and that is literally the most fundamental one you could have, but we always get fancy and cute and try to come up with advanced stats, and right. I'm not saying those are useless. I'm a huge advanced stats guy, but sometimes it really does come down to, can you put points on the board? And last year, the Beavers couldn't do it. I think they were 117th in the country in points per game, and through 2 weeks, they're sitting up there top 40, I think, if right. I saw that correctly. And it's just, I don't have any Oregon State affiliation, but it is nice to see from an objective standpoint that they are able to put pressure on defenses. Now, I know that a lot of their points against Ohio State were in, non-essential, non-consequential moments, but the fact is they kept it going, and I'm not sure they would have done that last year. And then last week against, who was it, Southern Utah, I think
yeah,
it was?
Yeah, that's right.
They nearly dropped a 50-burger on them. And that's
which is what
that's
you should do to an FCS opponent.
Absolutely. But last year they nearly lost to Portland State. So right. I had no faith coming into this game that they were going to blow them out. I wasn't even completely sure they were going to get the win, even though my official prediction was a W.
Right.
But for them to put together that kind of offensive performance, I think just like I said, at its most fundamental level, they're doing what they need to do to win football games, which is score the football.
Yeah. And I think aside from a freak injury against, I believe, Washington State last year, they had the offense and quarterback to make it all happen and then had to struggle through that injury, and the Ducks saw something similar with Herbert. But I think this year they have all the right pieces in place, and maybe they're not a top 25 team yet, but this shows signs that even if they're not going to get there this year, they could be bowl eligible, win a few games, which is a great sign, and then maybe next year make a run. You never know. So
speaking of run, I mean their freshman running back last week was phenomenal.
Right.
I can't remember exactly what his stat line was, but I know he had 4 touchdowns and over 200 yards on the ground, which is just incredible for a team that has historically, leaned on some of its running backs.
Right.
So if they can really develop this kid, I can't remember exactly what his size is, but I know he's under 6 feet. He's 5'10"-ish. So, you know, I can't remember if he's a little thicker or not, but they've had the mold of many different styles of running backs throughout the year. Everything between Jacquizz Rodgers and Ryan Nall. Exactly. So I think they can make this work, and it was really great to see him really bust out last week.
Yeah. So who do you like them against Nevada this week going on the road?
I do, actually. I like them in a close game. And I saw that the over-under on this matchup is 70 points, and I think that that is a little high because I think that we're looking at Oregon State's offense a little too early, saying they're going to keep this up. And I think that whoever the odds makers are probably looked at Nevada's first game against Portland State when they dropped 72 points and said, okay, but they also fell something like 41-10 last week. Right. So I think that the over under is a little high. I think it's going to be lower scoring than most projects, but I do think the Beavers sneak out with a 3-6 point win.
I agree with that. So moving on to Oregon, who is playing just another juggernaut. I don't know if you guys saw them playing against Bowling Green or Portland State, but this week they get arguably the best team in the country, San Jose State. First of all, are you okay with this many tune-up games early in the season? I know it's the quote-unquote smart thing to do because it keeps them from having any potential pitfalls before they start their conference schedule and can stay ranked. But is this exciting for you, watching them play teams that they really should win against handily?
You know, I'm okay with it this year for a couple reasons. One, Justin Herbert getting back into the swing of things is a big deal. I have no problem with him playing cupcakes. Two, Mario Cristobal. I think that this is a really good opportunity for him to, you know, really hone in on what he needs to figure out because he has number 9 Stanford coming in 2 weeks. So the tune-up games, I'm okay with that. The main reason I'm okay with it, though, is actually because Texas A&M was supposed to come to Oregon this year and they backed out. So this actually was less about Oregon scheduling and more about the circumstances with right. Texas A&M. Not that Texas A&M, you know, I think they scheduled it back in like 2014. So there was no way to say they were going to be a top tier competitor in 2018. But right. a big school coming in, bigger than, you know, Portland State or whoever they chose to fill the gap with. So I'm okay with it. I do like to see these top 25 teams, regardless of where they are in the country, right. schedule one big game. You know, Oregon has done that a few times with LSU, and they went out to Virginia, which I know wasn't like they were playing one of the greatest teams out there, but it was in a huge venue across the country. I like seeing them went to Boise State. Yep. I like seeing them push the boundaries just a little bit, even if they're not scheduling, you know, Alabama. They're not getting Alabama in week one. I'm okay right. with that, but I do like to see them push the envelope just a little bit.
So I'll make you answer the question, who's winning this week, Oregon or San Jose State?
Oh, man. I mean, Oregon's favored by, I think, 41.5 points. So it could be a close contest.
Well, let me make you answer a harder question then. Do you think they'll cover the spread?
That's a great question, actually. Oregon is 1-1 so far this year against right. the spread. Surprisingly, they did not beat Portland State last week against the spread. But here's why I think Oregon does beat the spread this week. I think they beat the spread because it's going to be the first game all season where their receivers are locked in and actually catching the ball on the first few drives.
Right.
Justin Herbert's looked great
He's
all
looked
year.
He's great.
He's putting passes exactly where he needs them to be. He knows when to lob it in. He knows when to throw a bullet. He's getting people right in the hands, whether they're in the corner of the end zone yeah. or slashing up the middle of the field.
Speaking it's of corner of the end zone, last week he had a touchdown pass. It was on a rope. And I thought, there were a couple of other guys open in the end zone. That looks like a pass he made just to show off his arm talent and to show that he is pro-ready, whether he goes out this year or next year. I just thought, there's so many college athletes that will just take the open guy. It was nice to see going against a cupcake opponent that you could afford to lose one, and he's seeing if he can fit it in that window. It's really fun to see.
No, that is really fun to see, and that's a really great point. I think this year has potential to be sort of a spotlight for him for sure.
Right.
Especially considering his draft stock and Heisman stock have actually dropped a little bit, not since the season started, but since the, you know, spring camps began. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is a really big opportunity for him. And yes, I do think Oregon covers. I think they actually cover pretty easily. The spread I believe I saw was 41.5. And I think they get a very convincing win.
So lastly, because we're running out of time, you mentioned that you don't have a problem with the tune-up games. So when you get number 9 Stanford in a couple weeks, what's this going to look like? I mean, are you going to feel like your team's really battle-tested and ready for a heavy opponent like that? Or is this going to be a little cause for concern that Stanford has played some capable opponents and Oregon has not? Is that going to cause Oregon to sputter a little bit on their opening half against them?
Yeah, I think they will sputter. I have no doubt in my mind that even if they finally put together just a golden first quarter this week, they will not be 100% ready for Stanford in 2 weeks. But that's the nice part about, you know, getting punched in the mouth right away. And right. I'm not talking LeGarrette Blount style. I mean, if you go out there against Stanford,
figurative punches.
Exactly. You know, Oregon is lucky enough that they've played all 3 non-conference games at home, and right. then somehow they actually get number 9 Stanford at home as well. So even if they do get punched in the mouth right from the outset of the game, they're at home. They're within the comfy confines of Autzen Stadium. They know everything about that stadium. They have 3 weeks under their belts in that stadium. And, you know, I'm not going to make the claim right now that they'll win the game just because I need to see another week before I start to even think about that. But I do think that they struggle in the beginning and then figure it out.
I hope so. I've seen too many U of O seasons where they've taken the first couple weeks off, so to speak, and then had a heavyweight opponent in the first quarter of the season. And it's not always gone well. Sometimes they really surprise you and blow out a USC or a Stanford, and other times they don't do that. And I'm hoping that they can come out and throw some of their own haymakers and knock out a really good opponent and get some national attention, but just makes me nervous to have such a long wait before they play a real guy.
Yeah, and to your earlier point, Stanford does not do that, right? Like, right. Listen to this early part of their schedule. I know they had San Diego State University in week 1, and they had a nice convincing 21-point win there. But then they had USC in week 2, which USC admittedly is typically overrated this time of year, at least has been since the Pete Carroll era ended. Right. And but they had number 17 USC on their schedule last week. They're going to play Oregon, who's going to be a top 20 team in week 4. Then they have Notre Dame, who's looking like they're probably going to be a top 10 team in week 5. Then they have Arizona State 2 weeks after that, which
they're looking,
you know,
really good.
They're looking solid, and I haven't looked specifically at their schedule, but there's a very good chance they're also a top 20 team by the time they play them. So, and by the way, 2 weeks after that, they have Washington. So, like, Stanford,
pretty good.
To their credit, man, they don't back down.
No, something they didn't do under Harbaugh and something they're not doing under Shaw is backing down. So we'll see what Oregon does. It seems like every other year the other one wins on their home field, and I worry that that's going to happen this year. But we'll see. A lot can happen. It's 2 weeks away. No need to panic right now. For all we know, these practice games are just going to be getting all the rust off, and they'll just come out firing against Stanford in a couple weeks. But we're over 30 minutes. We promised you guys we'd get out of here at 30. We didn't do it, but we're under 35, so take that with what you will. Bryant, thank you so much for being on tonight. Pleasure having you all, as always. We'll have you back next week, and we'll talk how our teams are doing, how the Ducks are doing, Beavers are doing, Seattle, all of the above. Great to have you. Have a good week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Casey.
This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. He's at Bryant Knox. I'm at Oregon Sports Guy. Find us on Twitter. Add us if you want, but these are our opinions. They aren't facts, so keep that in mind, people. Stay classy and stay tuned, Portland.